Welcome to the Soul Grit Podcast. I'm Ann Taylor McNeese, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I also love Jesus, and I'm passionate about all things gospel and therapy. I created Soul Grit to be at the intersection of mental health and Christian faith. Christ followers need a place to ask questions and get answers about mental health. Join me as we dive into real stories and real questions from people who want to honor God with their hearts, souls, and minds. Hey, this is Anne with the Soul Grit Podcast. I want to come on here for just a minute before we introduce the guest for today, because it's actually a really special day in the history of the Soul Grit Podcast. Today is our 100th episode, and I've been racking my brain to think through what are some ways that we could celebrate 100 episodes. It's a big accomplishment, right? So I want you to buckle up, because this episode that we have ahead of us is actually a little bit longer than usual. It's right over the 1 hour mark, and it's talking about something that is very dear and personal to me, which is achievement. And we're going to be talking to Rachel Jenneman about being an overachiever, being okay with underachieving, and what God's calling on our life is in that. So before we get started with that episode, I want to extend to listeners right now a special opportunity. In lots of previous episodes, you've heard my ad for my e-course called Faith Integration for Therapists. This is something that I'm passionate about because I think more therapists who are Christians need to be able to integrate their personal faith into their therapy practice. Now, to celebrate our 100 episodes and our upcoming 3-year anniversary in a couple of weeks, I want to let you know right now you can get the course for free throughout the rest of the summer. If you would like a code to be able to get the course for free, then you need to email me at info@soulgritresources.com. I'd love to have a conversation with you and provide you with a code where you will be able to get this content completely for free for you to go through this summer. This is a $597 value that I'm giving you for free just because I want to celebrate and I want more people to be able to access this content. Again, email me at info@soulgritresources.com to get that code. Now stay tuned for episode 100 with Rachel Jenneman.
Hi, welcome back to the Soul Grit Podcast. This is Anne, and I'm here today with Rachel Jenneman. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
I'm excited to talk to you because I think I saw your post like in a Facebook group or something, and you were talking about people who are overachievers and who never feel like what they've done is enough. Right. And I was going through a moment, and these moments happen frequently for me because I am a recovering overachiever. I am an Enneagram 3. I was, you know, valedictorian of my high school class. Like I need to rack up achievements. And yeah. I was through this phase of just like feeling like, what does God want to do with this part of my life where I'm raising children and running to practice and trying to podcast and do ministry and all of these things? Is any of it enough? And then I saw your post and you were talking about this issue and you've written a new book. And so I was like, well, this would be useful for me, if not for anybody else.
Right. Yeah.
Why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners? Just tell us a little bit about yourself and your history.
Well, I'm Rachel Jenneman. I live in northern lower Michigan. So everybody knows there's two peninsulas when it comes to Michigan, two parts. And I live, everybody digs out the hand. So I like to say I live near the top of the pinky of the hand of Michigan. I've lived here for well over 30 years, met my husband here, became a Christian here in Michigan. My husband and I were both not raised in the church.
Okay.
And as teenagers, we were invited to church, and I had no desire to go to church. It was just one of those things that, it sounds kind of weird, it just fell into my lap. Like a lot of people will tell you when they share their testimony, oh, I was going through this hard time and this rough spot in my life. It was none of that. I was fine, completely fine with life. And somebody asked me to come to church with them. And I was like, oh, geez, I don't know. I was 16 at the time. And they're like, you know, cute boys go to church. I was like, oh, well, then obviously I should be there. And so I went. Long
It
story,
worked.
long story short, I realized I didn't know where I was going. I always assumed I was going to heaven. I believed in God. I was a good person. I didn't know anything about this Jesus. I knew that he had died on a cross because I had seen pictures of it growing up, but didn't know that he had come back to life again. Didn't know any of that stuff until the gospel was actually presented to me. And I gave my life to Jesus. And then as time went on, I felt a call to ministry. My husband and I got married. I became the kids pastor at our church, and I was doing that for about 10 years. And then I really felt God was leading me out of that. And now I work in broadcasting where I'm a DJ for a Christian radio station. It sounds really weird. I always sound weird saying DJ, but yeah, that's what I am. I'm a DJ.
Okay, that's cool. I wondered what you meant by broadcaster because there's a lot of different.
So I broadcast for a Christian. It's we just flipped. We were kind of like contemporary Christian, and now we've like switched to an all worship format. So it's all like contemporary worship music. And so I'm the DJ between that.
Wow, that's cool. I don't think we've ever had a DJ on, so
First
welcome.
time for everything, yeah.
Okay. But I know from reading your book that you're also like a theater kid, right?
Yeah.
Like
So,
art or
okay. So
something.
now going back, I had done all the theater things in school. Like my goal was to be an actress. Every Oscar award-winning show, Golden Globes, whatever, I was in front of the TV and that was like my dream. Like I'm going to walk that red carpet someday. I was in every single play. If I wasn't in the play, I was directing it. If I wasn't directing it, I was doing makeup or lights or something. And I was accepted to a college in Chicago. Well, I was probably only Christian maybe about a year at this point, and I really didn't know what the voice of the Lord was. And it just didn't feel right. Like it didn't have peace. And again, I didn't know that that was the Lord and kind of giving me that agitation of this is not the direction to go. And so finally, I just said, okay, I'm not going. And I went and lived out on the East Coast for a while with family. And that is when I felt the Holy Spirit say, okay, you are called to preaching ministry. So that is what I do on the side is I travel and speak. And so throughout the book, I kind of open up with that, and it has a theater theme throughout the whole book.
Well, mention the title of the book first,
So
so.
it's called Underachiever: Finding Contentment in an Achievement-Obsessed World. Underachiever because those of us that are really driven, we feel like underachievers no matter what we do, no matter how much we accomplish. It's never enough. We are just simply an underachiever. And I find it humorous in a way that I meet all these people that are like, oh my gosh, I resonate with that title. And I'm looking at them going, you're one of the most achieved people I know. But inside, because they're so driven, it's still not enough because their expectations for themselves are so high that they still feel like that underachiever and they're never content with life.
And we constantly compare ourselves to other
Oh,
people that have their book published or have their
100%.
show, like so many listeners of their show, or they have whatever the thing is that they have.
100%. Yes.
So I just wanted to mention that theater aspect because it is the theme that you kind of tie the book together. Like you use a lot of metaphors from the theater. I was a theater kid as well. My daughter
Nice.
finished, she was prop manager for the spring musical and just discovered that she loves theater too. And so it's been a big thing in our house recently, looking back at old albums of old shows that I was in as well. So that was perfect timing for that for me as well, for you to be talking about that. So why don't you take us a little bit through your book? Take us through what do you really want people to take away from this?
Well, I think the one of the biggest things is if you have a drive, and again, not everybody is a driven person. The first round of edits, the person that went through my book, they were like, yeah, this isn't me. Like, I'm just not a driven person. I'm content with what she's a barista. at a Christian coffee shop, and she's in her 30s, and she just loves what she does, ministering to people that come to the coffee shop. Like, that's her thing. And she was like, yeah, that book so does not resonate with me. But there are those people that are super driven, like myself, that have all this ambition. My husband is not one of those people. He's perfectly fine where he's at. But I think one of the things that we need to recognize as a driven person is that, one, it's okay. And that drive is how we are wired. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. We're not weird. We're not, like, there isn't anything wrong with us because mm-hmm. we have such a desire to drive or such a desire to achieve. But just like anything else, it can get out of balance. It's yeah. just like us as females. There's nothing wrong with us wanting to dress nice or to wear makeup and be pretty. It's when it gets out of balance, and that's when vanity comes in. So mm-hmm. just first of all, recognizing that our desires come from God, but also recognizing that sometimes our desires come from external sources, and trying to pinpoint where those external sources are. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't pinpoint that, we can go off of the path that God has for us. So I'll give you an example. There's church culture.
Mm-hmm.
There's ethnic culture.
Mm-hmm.
There's family culture. There's even socioeconomic culture.
Yeah.
And all of those can add pressure to our lives of whether we should achieve or not achieve. So let's take socioeconomic, for example. You have people who have a poverty mentality.
Mm-hmm.
They have no desire for achievement. I think there's a part of them that wants to achieve, but they choose not to because you don't own a whole lot when you're in poverty. So mm-hmm. you own other people. And if you decide to better yourself, to everyone else, it looks like you are betraying them.
Yeah.
Ben Carson is probably the poster child for this.
Mm-hmm.
He grew up in the hood, grew up in poverty, and he started to better himself, and he started to study, and he would go into the inner city and go to art galleries and study, and people that he grew up with put him down for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they felt as if him bettering himself was a betrayal. Then you have the middle class. Middle class, they believe in hard work, hardcore. Everything revolves around hard work. If you didn't work for it and somehow it was just given to you, it's almost looked down upon. Mm-hmm. And so whatever you've achieved, it looks really good for you if you worked really hard for it. And then you have the elite or the wealthy mentality, and they're all about networking. Yes, working hard is good, but if you can get to where you need to go through networking,
mm-hmm.
then it works out better for you.
Yeah.
You have, what's the word I'm looking for? Ethnic traditions. I was on a plane, excuse me. I was on an airplane on a missions trip on my way to Bangladesh, and I was sitting next to an Indian. And, you know, you're sitting next to him for hours on a plane, and you just trying to strike up conversation, and we were doing the best we could through accents and idioms. And I just asked the same question you always do: what do you do for a living? And he says, well, in my culture, your family pressures you to either to become an engineer mm-hmm. or a doctor.
Right.
I became an engineer because I thought that was the easiest.
Mm.
Ethnic pressure, but also family pressure too. And then even in the United States, you look at certain pressures where you live, where there's expectations to achieve certain things. So right. take the Bible Belt, for example. You're not in the Bible Belt. I'm not in the Bible Belt. So this idea is foreign to me, but from people that I've talked to in the Bible Belt say the pressure is on to get married super young
mm-hmm.
and have babies right away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the pressure. That's the achievement. That's the goal. Where you and I come from, it's, oh no, you have to have the career first. If you get married and you have kids right away, well, then you've ruined your life. So there's mm-hmm. all these different pressures of achievement that you have to look for. And then, and you alluded to this a little bit ago, we get that comparison because of social media. You see all these people, well, they have 100,000 followers and I only have 50,000 followers, or, you know, whatever, name your number. Mm-hmm. And it's a whole culture revolved around showing off what we've achieved,
mm-hmm.
but it also puts thoughts in your brain of things that you think you should achieve that you never would have thought of achieving before until you saw it on social media.
Right. Like I, right now I have to balance, okay, well, I'm a good therapist and I always have a full practice and I'm happy with what I do, but because I see other people on social media doing things like monetizing their business in different ways or publishing things or whatever that might be, I think, oh, maybe just serving the population as their therapist is not enough. I need to be doing something that also puts me in the spotlight in some way. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I get that for sure. 100%.
I think even in ministry context, like we have a culture of celebrity pastors, right?
Yeah. So, well, and I don't know how many times I've heard of pastors, because I've worked in the ministry a long time too. And how many pastors are like, I'm doing the same things as Stephen Furtick, or I'm doing the same things as whatever megachurch. I don't know who most of the megachurch pastors, I'm so out of that loop for whatever reason. I don't know, but whatever megachurch, I'm doing all these same things. Why don't I have that following? Mm-hmm. Why don't I have that influence? And that's really difficult. And that's where you got to look inside yourself and go, hold on, is that my calling? Mm-hmm. Is that my calling to one, be doing all the same things? And second, is it my calling to have that much influence or that much of a following?
Yeah. Well, talk to us more about calling. Like, what is the place of calling in this conversation?
That's another chapter that I have in the book, not necessarily calling, but a purpose.
Yeah.
And I think purpose is a big deal to really discover that about yourself, because again, we can see everything else that other people are doing and get off of our path, off of what our genuine purpose is, because we think, well, they're doing the quote unquote right thing, so that's the direction I need to be going. When you have a lane, and see, when I left church ministry, it was 2020, it was right before the shutdown, and I came back from vacation, and for whatever reason I was really struggling to be back to work. I just felt like my passion was gone, my vision was gone, I was irritated, didn't want to be there. I mean, I loved what I did. Why was I struggling so much? And it had been something that had been coming up in me for a while, bubbling up. So I called a friend of mine who was a senior pastor for many years, and now he was kind of a counselor to pastors. So I said, what's going on? This is how I feel. And he goes, oh, it sounds like you are moving into your next season of life. I mean, very nonchalant. And he said, you're going to do this. And I was like, oh, thank God he's going to tell me what to do, because really, I don't have the mental capacity for someone to teach me something or tell me to figure it out. I just need somebody to tell me what to do. And he says, I need you to make three lists.
Okay.
Your first list is going to be all the things that you're good at. What are you talented at? Mm-hmm. What is good about you? All of your personality traits, all of your skills. And then the second thing, your second list you're going to make is your passions. What are you passionate about? What do you talk about for hours? That once you start talking about it, you maybe talk super fast, or when you get involved in it, it just takes up so much of your time, you didn't even notice that 2 hours just passed by because it just went by so fast for you. What are you passionate about? And then that third list, what is your mission? What makes you angry? What world's problems do you want to see solved? And then you take those three and then you marry them together to create your sweet spot.
Okay.
And that's when you find, or at least you kind of have a better idea of my purpose. So I may look at a friend and go, oh my gosh, they are flipping houses. And that seems like so much fun to me to buy a house, to fix it. I don't want to do that, by the way. I'm just using it as an example. But, you know, they flip houses, and how cool would it be to fix this all up and do this, 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 and this. But then I look at my list and I'm like, I am not gifted in that at all.
Yeah,
I have no gifting of carpentry, of creating in that specific way. If you want me to decorate it, hands down. But all the things that flipping a house takes does not sit with any of those three areas. Now, obviously, God is God, and he's going to do whatever he wants. So if he calls you to do something outside of those three areas, that's a whole nother story. But for most of us, we kind of need to stay in our lane of looking at those three areas. Okay, what am I good at? What am I passionate about? What is my mission? And how do I stay in that lane? And that's really what's going to help you with your purpose, with your calling. And I think here's the hard part. And I do this myself. I think we overthink it.
Yeah.
I think we're waiting for maybe the big angel to come down, like with Mary, when the angel Gabriel visited Mary and said, "Okay, you are raising the Son of God." I wish that would happen. I wish an angel would come down and go, "Rachel, this is exactly what you're going to do." But that doesn't happen. Yes, an angel came down and spoke to Daniel. Jesus came down and knocked Paul off and blinded him and said, "Hey, you're going to go on this path instead of this path." Like, I wish that would happen to me, but that doesn't. So when those big spiritual things are not happening, we tend to overthink, am I doing the right thing? But you know yourself. You know what you're good at. Don't be humble in that. Just lay it out. What am I good at? You know what you're passionate about. You know what makes you angry. So look at those to really find your calling and finding your purpose.
Do you think some people don't know what they're good at?
Yes. That's why you ask your friends. I mean, I think you do sometimes know what you're good at, but you're afraid to say it
Say it out
because we don't want to be prideful. We're Christians. We can't be prideful. Well, okay, I get it. But you can say what you're good at
loud.
without being prideful.
Right.
And if you are really struggling, that's when you talk to friends. One of the things that I actually ask a lot of people when they're trying to discover what they're good at, I'll say, "What was it about you as a child that annoyed people the most?"
Okay.
Because whatever, I mean, think of your own kids. We as moms, we know what annoys the tar out of us with each of our kids. However, what is most annoying about them is most likely going to be their greatest asset as an adult.
Okay, so wait, I have an 11-year-old right now that makes weird noises all the time. Please tell me this is going to be something good for his future.
Don't know what that is. Write it down 20 years from now and be like, okay, how did that happen? But like for me, I've always had a ton of energy and I'm really animated and I talk fast and you know, I'm constantly asked if I have ADHD. I promise, I don't need to be on Ritalin. It's just who I am. And it was really annoying to people growing up. People called me spaz. It just irritated them. But what do I get complimented on now?
Your energy.
"Wow, I listen to you, Rachel, every day on the radio, and I love your energy.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that sermon that you gave, Rachel, and I love whenever you speak because you have so much energy." Ding, 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 ding. Like, what was most annoying about me as a child end up becoming one of my greatest assets as an adult? What was on my report card growing up? "She talks too much. What do I do for a living now? I talk too much." Right? So I have a child who's argumentative. And he wants to argue every little thing. And he wants to take any phrase I say and twist it. And I'm going, "Okay, Jesus."
Your future attorney.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to be an FBI negotiator. I don't know, something. So help me, Lord, turn this in the right direction and nurture it. Instead of squashing it, how can we nurture it and move it into the right direction? So when you're looking for things that you're good at, look at the things that people are either annoyed with you or about, but also what people compliment you on the most. You may not realize that there are certain things that people see that you don't. So I would get all the time, and I always thought it was weird. I didn't understand it. Like when I first became a Christian, people would say, "Oh my gosh, you're just so real. You're just so authentic." And I'm like, "Well, you expect me to be fake? I don't understand." Not realizing that over the years, I've heard people say over and over again when they'd go to church, they'd wear a mask and they would be fake because they were so afraid of people, what people would think about them or say about them. Well, I don't have that mask. Like, I
You didn't
probably
know
need
about it.
one. I probably need a filter, is what I probably need. But that was one of the things I had to write down on my good list of, oh, this is what people compliment me on. I'm authentic and I'm real and I'm relatable to them, and that helps them.
Yeah. I think about when I was a kid, I used to get comments more from like my parents, I would say. My teachers liked the fact that I was quiet and that I was observant and attentive and always knew like three steps ahead what we needed to be doing. My parents would say, well, Anne, you just like, you're kind of deadpan. Like you don't express a lot of emotion, you know, you could sit in the corner and be content, you know. But what, as I'm thinking through this, as you're talking, this as an adult has allowed me to work with really anxious people because I can just stay really calm, like real calm all the time.
You're a therapist. You have to be calm and you have to be quiet and you have to be observant. So what annoyed your parents about you is now your greatest asset and you're using it.
Yeah, I'll have to see if that annoyed them or if they were just making an observation, because I'll have to see what annoyed them about me. But yeah, I see that too, like with my daughter, who's very creative and who has ADHD, and she's got just a mess or a project going on like every square inch of my house. And that's really annoying to me. But God,
ADHD people are some of the most creative people, and they end up being some of the most successful people in life.
All right. So like talking to your friends and making the lists, like that helps us figure out what we're good at, which helps us figure out our purpose. This came up when you were talking, because you mentioned that maybe your husband's not as driven as you are. I would say the same thing for my husband. Like if I weren't a therapist having a podcast, like I literally have 13 other careers that I would pursue right now.
Oh, hands down.
Right. And he doesn't. And that is confusing to my brain, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. But when you were first talking about like overachievers, like chronic overachievers learning, like that's okay that God wired you that way. I also want for you to say that is okay if you're not.
Yes.
Like, it's okay if you're content with the path that you're on.
And it drives me crazy. It drives me. And I've told him this, so it's not like I'm talking behind his back. Like it drives me absolutely bonkers. Like, okay, I've always been told my whole Christian life, I'm called as a wife to inspire. Well, what do I inspire when there's nothing to inspire? I don't understand, you know? And he has been motivated to do certain things, but it's always been for the benefit of our family. So I get pregnant with another child. Hey, I am going to go back to college. I'm going to get this degree so then I can make more money here, you know? And we had a conversation one time, and this was really helpful. He said, actually, let me back up. So I read an article, it was like on Facebook or something, and it was near Christmas time, and it was about Mary and Joseph. Okay. And that Mary was the one that was called. And Joseph came along, and it became a part of his call too. Like, yes, the angel came and said, this is what you're going to do. But Mary was called first. And I realized, oh, I think that's us. Like, I'm the Mary and he's the Joseph. Like, because he said, Rachel, I feel called to push your dreams. I feel called to support your ambitions.
Yeah.
And that's really noble. It, again, drives me crazy because I wish that more, but he's perfectly fine. And there's another thing that can contribute to a person being driven. And it's childhood trauma. So if a person grew up, maybe two-parent home, they were constantly loved, they were always heard, everything was stable, finances were stable, love was abundant, you always had food on the table, whatever, you might not be as driven as, say, someone.
Well, I have all of that. Came from a very stable Christian.
Oh, I'm not saying every person.
So there, but there is what I think you're saying is there is the potential for drivenness to come out of the brokenness of trauma.
Right. Right. Because those that have maybe some childhood trauma are going to go either one of two ways. They're either going to go to drugs and alcohol or gambling or some sort of addiction to ease that pain, or they're going to be constantly driven trying to achieve to make up for what was lacking in the past. And yeah, so a lot of people that I talk to that are just type B personalities, one, I think that's just how God created them. And second, a lot of them came from just really stable homes where they felt loved and everything was okay. So they don't feel like they have to prove themselves, where someone that had maybe a harder childhood feels that necessity to have to prove themselves. Now, I didn't come from a home that was super stable. I mean, stable the best that it could be. I had a lot of hardships growing up, but I don't feel like that's my driving force of why I achieve. I just think genuinely it's just how I'm wired.
Well, I notice in your book that you have a lot of opportunities for people to do some exercises, journaling. There's some the graphs and charts that they can fill out, things like that. Would you just kind of walk us through some of the ideas that you have? Like you've already given us the list of or the idea of making the three lists. So what you're good at, what you're passionate about, and what your mission is. But talk to us a little bit about some other ideas that people can do. And of course, I want people to be able to go buy the book and look at the thing that you're going to talk about, but I want to entice them.
Yeah, no, after each chapter, there's just a journaling time where I ask specific questions just really for you to discover more about yourself. I think the more we learn about Jesus and the learn we more about ourselves, the more we can realize how unique we are each made, and then we can do more for Jesus. But I don't think we're going to do as much for Jesus if we really don't know who we are as individuals. And I'm not talking, I know like our world is in an identity crisis right now. And so we're always talking about identity scriptures and things to memorize. I'm talking more about us as individuals. How has God created us uniquely as an individual and going a little bit deeper? So, yeah, at the end of each chapter, just questions to dig deeper into what you just read. So when I talked about the what are you good at, your passions, your mission, I have that diagram right there that you can fill out. I also talk near the end about your dreams. And so I have a portion for you to make a list. And the reason why I want you to make a list of your dreams is because sometimes we have dreams that have been given to us by God, and some dreams that may possibly be given by God. You might not be sure, but it sounds really cool. And then you have other dreams that may sound neat, but they're not necessarily from the Lord. And it doesn't mean that you can't pursue those dreams. But making sure that you are putting the God dreams first and making sure that those are a priority. So near the back of the book, you can make that list of, okay, what are my God dreams? What do I know that I know that I know that God has asked me to do? Okay, what are my possible God dreams? Hey, this might be cool, and I think it might be from God, but I don't know. I'm going to stick it on the list. Then you have your bucket list items of things that, man, if I died without doing this, I'd be pretty disappointed if I did not check that off of my list. And then you have the list of cool things. Those are things that would be really neat, but you're not going to regret it on your deathbed, right? So I may regret not reaching for a TED talk on my deathbed, but I'm not going to regret not visiting Spain. Like Spain sounds really cool, but it's not a bucket list item. And then the last portion is dreams that need to die. Because there are dreams that we've had that God hasn't called us to. Like, for example, me, I wanted to be an actress, and I still struggle with that. I still struggle with why do all those people get to be up on stage doing that? And I'm not, Lord. Why did you call me over here? I don't understand. Why is this still in my heart? And it's just one of those things that I've had to pray, God, help this to die because it's not what you've called me to do. So yeah, different lists and different questions. And then just a journaling space of if you have any other thoughts, what is God speaking to you right now? You can just fill that all out.
Great. So it's a really interactive kind of book for people who,
Right.
yeah, it's a tool. It's not just get some more knowledge in your head, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope there's some knowledge. I hope you learned something.
No, well, no, I mean, not just knowledge, but yes,
Yes. No,
you'll
I get
learn,
what you're saying.
and then you'll learn deeper if you do the exercises, basically. What I'm saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you've listened to the Soul Grit podcast for even one episode, you know my guests and I believe that when we integrate the power of God with the wisdom of modern psychology, we get supercharged healing, change, and growth in counseling. As a Christian therapist, however, I realize that there are many practitioners out there who are personally Christians but don't know how to integrate their faith into their counseling practices. That's why I created the e-course, Faith Integration for Therapists. In this premium 5-module course, therapists who love Jesus will learn everything from understanding their calling, to marketing their practices to Christians, to adapting evidence-based interventions to honor our faith. You can learn more about the online course at www.soulgritresources.com/courses and send an email to info@soulgritresources.com to receive a discount code.
Okay, so Rachel, I want you to talk about a couple of the chapters that are really meaningful for people. Mm-hmm. Let's talk first about what it means to have to wait on these dreams or achievements.
Waiting is horrible. It is the worst thing ever. That's all I'm going to say. It's like, as driven people, we hate waiting on dreams. And if you, if I revert it back to theater, it's we're constantly waiting backstage for our scene. We're watching other actors get up on the stage and they're doing their thing. And I'm still waiting. Okay, I got my costume on. I've practiced my lines. When am I going to get out on the stage? When am I going to have my practice? And there are many reasons why waiting for the driven person is hard, but I think one of the biggest ones right now in our culture is that we are a youth-obsessed culture. And the older we get, the more we struggle with watching people younger and younger living out what we want to accomplish.
Right.
And we celebrate youth accomplishing greatness. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's great. But we do it so much. So I'll give you an example from my life. When I was 15 and I still, you know, I wasn't a Christian yet. I wanted to be an actress. And I'm looking at, I don't know if it was like a People magazine. It was one of those grocery store magazines that my mom had bought. And the title said Top 30 Stars Under 30. And it listed all these movie stars, these TV stars, they're under 30 and how big they are. And right then the message was clear. Oh, I have to accomplish as much as possible, as soon as possible. And the reality is that did not happen. And there's nothing wrong with 30 under 30 awards, 40 under 40 awards. I never won either one of those. But that always, and again, nothing wrong with it, but in my mind, in the driven person mind, it sends that message of, I never did anything that was worth anything under 30. I never did anything worth anything under 40. I've never been celebrated. And so I'm an older millennial. And something that was happening to older millennials was what is known, and I'm sure you know this as a therapist, the quarter life crisis.
Right.
Midlife crisis people, most people know about that. You know, you get into your 50s and then all of a sudden, oh, I don't have much time left. I need to make up for lost time. I'm going to get the new car, maybe even the new wife, and I'm going to do all these dangerous things to make up for lost time. Well, what was happening to older millennials was they were going through what was known is now known as the quarter life crisis, anywhere between 23, 27 years old. All of a sudden, they feel like they've ruined their life because they don't have it figured out. Because all throughout their teenage years, they were told all the things you have to do and pretty much that pressure of you've got to have it all figured out by 25. But then by 27, I didn't have all that figured out. I still didn't fully know what I was doing. Here I am with a mortgage and 2 kids, and I have no achievements. And I genuinely, in my mind, said, I ruined my life. I have no accomplishments. And it was because I was under the impression I had to achieve so much as soon as possible. I had to have it all figured out by 25. I had to do all the things. by 25. And that's just what, and it took me a while to kind of get over that. And now I get it. Like, oh, 27 is really young. And even now in my early 40s, that is still really young. There is, we always say that life is short. And I'm going, is it? Because I'm going, man, I still got, unless something happens, I still got a lot of life left. Yeah. There's so much more that I can do in these next 20, 40 years of life. But we celebrate it and we push it so much. You look at marketing. What is marketing geared to? Kids. Because they know that the younger that they can grab them as a client, then they have a lifelong consumer. Mm-hmm. So I think that is one of the biggest, so to answer your question about waiting, I think that is the number one thing in the West right now that is really making us as a culture struggle. Is that
you? Yeah, I expected you to say something more about like instant gratification culture.
That's good. Yeah.
Like we can get any knowledge, any information that we want immediately. We can get DoorDash. We can get, you know, your car breaks down, call an Uber. Like you can do anything you want immediately. And so if you can't do the thing like that life goal or dream immediately, it makes it feel like it takes too long. This must not be right. And that.
Yeah. Well, because you see other people doing it so fast.
And I always have to turn back to like scripture when I think about, okay, so Moses, 40 years, he kills the Egyptian, 40 years in the desert, God calls him back to, or 40 years as a shepherd, and then God calls him back to Egypt to deliver the people. Yeah. Like, okay, Abraham, 100 years old, I'm finally going to come through on my promise. And so, or if we even go to like not a biblical example, but just in our culture right now, I saw something recently that was really helpful to me. It said Martha Stewart, household name, right?
Yeah.
She didn't become a household name until she was in her 50s. Like she didn't even start her business until she was in her 50s. Mm-hmm. And so for those of us who are younger than that, that seems like, oh, that's so old to be reaching your dream. But I think once you're there, you'll be like, you won't feel as old as you think you will, right?
For sure. And there are a lot of people that we don't realize. I think it was Morgan Freeman didn't get land his first role until his 50s at the age of 30. Harrison Ford. Mm-hmm. He was a carpenter. He wasn't an actor. At the age of 30, he was still working in the trades. And I think Vera Wang didn't design her first dress until her 40s. So there are a lot of people that, yeah, they don't make it quote unquote big until later in life. But because we are obsessed with youth, I would totally agree with you that instant gratification, but where does that instant gratification come from? A lot of it is coming from what we see on social media, what we see on television, not always knowing the backstory.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to go back to like the quarter life crisis thing, when I was in that age range, I was in grad school and I was married already. We were purposely putting off having children until I graduated. And so I was in kind of like this driven, focused path. Where I didn't have to have a quarter life crisis because I already, like, I was on the pathway. I knew, like, I was doing the right thing in my life of getting the education first, then building my family, buying my house, like, doing all the things in the right order, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And so it didn't happen until probably my 30s that I said, okay, well, I did all the things. I got an elite education. I got my master's degree. I got my counseling license. I have a stable marriage. I had my 3 children. I have a mortgage. And here I am in my 30s. I apparently have arrived, except I don't feel like fulfilled in some of those like deeper dreams and ambitions that I have.
I had not heard of that, of people like in their 30s, like experiencing that, but I get what you're saying. Like you did everything in the right order. And I think for me, I struggled because I didn't do everything in the quote unquote correct order. Mm-hmm. Like I always said, I'm not getting married until I'm 28 years old because I'm not going to let a man run my life and he's not going to hold me back from succeeding. And what did I do? I got married at 22. I had my baby, my first baby at 24. And then that's when I was like, oh, I've ruined my life. Not that I didn't love my kids. I loved my kids. I loved my husband. I loved my family. But somehow I did it all wrong. So I must have ruined my life somehow.
And I've heard it both ways. Like, I got married also really young, 21, and we didn't have kids right away, but we were in grad school. And so we never got to like go on the Europe backpacking trip or, you know, go on, you know, do some of the like wild adventures that you can do like post-college, but pre-kids. Like, we just got right into our like married life and paying for school. And then as soon as school was done, then we had babies. And so there was never a kind of that experience. So in the same way as you're saying, I ruined my life by having my kid at that moment, which is not what you're saying now, but you felt that way then.
No, you feel that way. And what nobody tells you is that you'll eventually get there. Mm-hmm. So I was probably about 29, 28. And my daughter was, she was just a little thing, 3 or 4, and she would go to preschool and she would get up on the bus. She would go in the morning. And so it would just be me and my toddler son. And I would watch Good Morning America every morning. And it made my life worse. I don't know why I watched it, but it made it worse because I'm watching all these beautiful women who are living New York Manhattan lifestyles, which I've had a crush on New York City since forever. And they're living this Friends lifestyle. You know, we all grew up in the 90s, or I grew up in the 90s anyway, and saw Friends. I wasn't a Christian. So
okay. I was a Christian and I also saw Friends, so that's okay.
Like, who am I gonna offend right now that I said that I watched Friends as a kid? But I expected that I was going to be living that lifestyle, and I wasn't. So I'm watching these women and they've got these amazing careers in Manhattan, and all the news stories that they were bringing up of the earthquake that happened in Haiti and all these people going down to help, and then people that were serving our country in Afghanistan and those that were on the political trail helping with whatever candidate. And I'm like, I just want to do it all, but I'm stuck at home and I love my boy, but yet I'm here. And like, I just wanted to crawl out of my skin because it's like, I just wanted to do something. And yes, I was doing something. I was giving my son a stable home. I was loving him. I was doing what I was called to do right then and there. But I wanted to do all the other things. And and this was happening during the earthquake in Haiti. Do you remember that? Back, I don't know, 10 some years ago, that it was really bad. And people from Haiti that were in the United States were not allowed to go back. And I'm like, I just want to go down there, Lord. I just want to go and help. And rebuild and do all the things. And I heard the Holy Spirit say, Rachel, this is not going to be the last natural disaster. There will be more. And though it didn't like take all the agitation away, it did calm my spirit of, oh yeah, this isn't the last time something bad is going to happen. There will be other natural disasters. Well, fast forward a few years. It's 2017. My daughter, I don't remember how old she was, 11, maybe 12. And her and I went down to Texas to help with Hurricane Harvey relief. Like, we got to do disaster relief and we got to do it together. Like, it wasn't just me going. I got to do it with my child.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing that us who are waiting have to realize is just because it's not happening now doesn't mean it won't happen. But that's how we feel. We feel as though if we don't accomplish it now, then it's never going to happen. And that's not necessarily true. The doors will open. They'll just open at the right time.
Mm.
And you know the phrase, the right thing at the wrong time is still the wrong thing.
Okay.
So it's not the right time, but eventually it will be the right thing at the right time, and you will be better prepared for it. Mm. The other thing that has helped me in the waiting is when everybody's waiting for something. Like, I feel as though I'm the only one waiting. I'm not. Everybody's waiting for something. And I also feel on the waiting that I've messed up somehow. And that I'm being punished and waiting because I didn't do something right. I missed God somewhere. And that isn't necessarily true. It's not that I haven't done things incorrectly. It's not that maybe my dreams aren't going to happen, that I'm just in denial and thinking I'm supposed to go this way and God is having me go this way. Sometimes it's that God is setting certain things up because my calling and my dreams, the things that I want to achieve, don't just involve me. They involve other people. They are a ripple effect for other people. And God may have to put this set over here and get this prop set up over here and that prop over there. And then this actor has to move over stage right here before then you can get up onto the stage. And your part's not going to work if all of those things are right, not in order. So those are kind of the things that help me in the waiting process. And then in the waiting, I say, okay, Lord, if I'm going to wait backstage, then what do I need to do right now in my waiting? Mm-hmm. Are you building my character? Can we be done with building my character? I'm kind of over that, but no, what is it in my character that needs to be built? What is it that I can learn at this moment in time? If I want to be a public speaker, okay, well, I'll just keep learning more about different techniques of how to speak. If I feel as though I want to run a business and that door is not opening yet, there's a lot of things that I can do right now to study business. YouTube has everything. I mean, anything, you can type in anything and it comes right up. You can learn whatever. And taking that time in your waiting to learn.
It's active waiting, not passive waiting.
Yeah, for sure. Sitting
back, sipping your coffee, waiting for God to show up on scene. You're doing all of the things that might help you be better at that thing once the door finally opens.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Okay, so talk to us about rest a little bit, because it is really hard for somebody who has an achievement mindset to think that they don't have to be productive 100% of the time. So how do we rest when this is the mindset?
Maybe you have this same issue with your husband. My husband can get out of work and he can go and sit on his phone and scroll on Instagram for an hour. He can then go watch a movie, all this stuff, and he feels 100% rested. That drives me crazy.
Yep.
I mean, yes, I get caught up on my phone when I shouldn't, but I can't sit and watch a movie. If I'm going to watch a movie, can I at least have a basket of towels that I can fold?
Yep. Laundry folding.
And I have something that I can put together, that's something that I can create. But for the driven person, rest to them sounds lazy. Mm-hmm. Either A, because hard work was constantly driven in them as a child, and any kind of break was looked down upon. Mm-hmm. Or you feel as though you have to exhaust yourself, burn yourself out so you can deserve rest. Mm-hmm. You almost feel like you have to earn it, and you haven't earned it unless you have burnt yourself out somehow. Mm-hmm. And then you just feel plain lazy because there's other things that have to get done. Yeah. There's just things that have to be done. And here I am sitting on my butt doing absolutely nothing when the dishes need to be done, towels need to be folded. And hey, I got goals to crush over here. I could be working on those right now because every habit or goal crushing book says you need to sacrifice every little time you have and make sure you work on that. So there's this idea of, okay, I'm now lazy that I'm resting. But I think we have to shift our mind into what exactly is rest? Mm-hmm. Because for a long time, I thought rest was, I just sit on my butt and I eat chips, binging Netflix. Don't get me wrong. Sometimes that is a much needed thing. Sometimes you just need to lay in bed for an hour and watch Law and Order and eat your kettle corn. And it feels great. But that, for a driven person, is not necessarily restful. So there are different areas of rest that a driven person can do, but also feel productive at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
One of those things is creating.
Yeah.
God created on the seventh day. creating, okay, let me, how do I word this? Rest was not a thing until the seventh day. God created rest. And when we are able to create, whether, like for me, I don't like cake pops, but there's something therapeutic about making them. I enjoy making them. I enjoy baking. I enjoy making homemade pasta. Those are the things that I like to create, and that actually brings rest to my body. And then there's also creation itself. Mm-hmm. You go down to a national park, you go to the ocean, or for me, you go to the lake, you go for a hike somewhere. All of us are God's creations. And I feel as though God probably did not take a nap on the seventh day. He probably looked at all of his creation and was like, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm going to rest, but I'm going to enjoy it. And we also need to be enjoying God's creation. And then there's recreational activities. Mm-hmm. When we're young, play was how we learned. Imagine we learned through imagination. And then as we get older, play is not praised. Hard work is praised. Mm-hmm. And as you're if you still have some sort of imagination at 12, it's almost squashed. Okay, it's about time to get serious now and not have so much of play in your brain. But play is restful. Now, at 45 or however old you are, it's probably not going to be age appropriate for you to play pirates in the water or whatever. I don't know. But everybody's into pickleball right now. You know, you could go play pickleball. You could play tennis. You could roam an art gallery. Whatever it is that makes you feel rested, or whatever that is recreational, those are things that are going to bring you rest, but you're also going to feel productive at the same time.
Yeah. I heard something really good probably a year ago. If your work is mostly mental, then your rest should mostly be physical. And if your work is mostly physical, then your rest can be mental. And I thought that was really great because
brilliant.
My work is very mental. I have to be emotionally attuned. I have to be thinking through different theories and interventions and tracking what, you know, 15 different people are telling me, the intimate details of their life every week. And so that's very mental. And I am stationary, sedentary in a comfortable chair for that entire time. And so when I leave work, I need to do something physical with my body to transition from like work life into family life. And so a lot of times I will go for a walk because it, like you said, it's getting out in creation, sunshine, it's California, you know,
we've got lots of it.
We've had several good months of walking weather. We're about to get into the too hot weather for walking, but that has been really meaningful to me that I have to incorporate something physical, whether that is like doing a home project, doing a workout, going for a long walk, doing something outside with the kids. Like it has to be physical for me to rest, because for me, if I were just to sit down and read a book as part of my rest, it feels like I'm still doing my work. No.
That's brilliant. I love that.
Yeah.
And two, we have to remember that sometimes there is work that feels restful to us. So like you said, that physical activity, we almost feel like rest has to be stationary when rest can be physical. I'm super excited that tomorrow we're putting in new doors in our hallway and I'm going to paint them. That sounds like work, but for me, that's going to be restful while accomplishing something at the same time.
Yeah, and that's different from what you do for your work.
Yes.
And it's something that's new. There's creativity that it sparks a little bit of something in you, right? Some excitement.
So we talked about passions earlier, right? Things that you're good at, things you're passionate about, and what your mission is. There are two different types of passions, though, that you have to figure out. Okay, what is my passion for career, for wanting to make the world a better place, for wanting to suffer for? And then there's your passion for your rest. Mm. I love studying American history. Mm. I don't know what it is. just a history nerd. I think it is the coolest thing. Anytime we go on vacation, I'm like, okay, is there a battlefield that we can visit? I mean, did any of the signers of the Declaration of Independence live here? Can we go visit their house? Like, I mean, I'm always looking for something historical that I can go visit, because that is something that I'm passionate about. Now, do I want to be a history teacher? No, that sounds really boring. I don't want to be a historian, but it's a passion that is restful to me. So that's when you have to differentiate. Yeah, it is the hobby. So you have to differentiate, because there's that phrase, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Well, that's not necessarily true. Because if I'm not willing to suffer for it, if that's not my mission, if that's not what I'm wanting to do to make the world a better place, then no, I don't want to do that. Once money is put on the table, then it's no longer fun. So you have to have, yes, your work passion, but then you also have to have your rest passion.
Okay, that's a good word. I'm going to think more through that. So since we're on the topic of rest, this may be a good transition. What are you doing for soul care?
Oh, that is a great question. Life has been so incredibly busy lately, and it's just because of where we're at with teenagers. Thank you, Jesus, my oldest drives. That was the best part of parenthood ever. Yeah. Everyone, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, my baby's all grown up. Like, I'm like, thank you, Jesus, my baby's all grown up. Like, thank you, Jesus, that she can do all of the things. So that is super helpful. But we still have sports and jobs and concerts and this and that. And it's just been nuts. And so I've had to set those boundaries of Saturday is I'm not doing anything for anybody. I'm not answering my emails. I'm not working, because I could easily, I know a DJ doesn't sound like that, like it's a ton of work. I mean, what do? You just talk in between songs. There's actually a lot of work that goes into it, and I could easily bring that home, but I choose to say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do the things that I want to do. And as a family, what I've had to institute was what I call a red box day. And I talked to a pastor's wife that did this. And on her calendar, they created a red box on a specific day. And I say, okay, this day is forced family fun day.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they see that red box and they're like, oh, forced family fun. Yep, forced family fun. And this is the time that we have set aside that we are purposely, actively going to spend time together as a family, whether it is we're going for a hike, maybe watching a movie, even though I can't stand watching movies. I'll do it for them though. Like, I'll do it for them. So those are kind of the things that I am trying to do for soul care. I love to create. That's one of the things that I like to do for my rest time. I used to love reading quite a bit, and maybe I'm at the place that you said, because I think what you said was brilliant. And maybe because I'm constantly sitting and working and I'm not as active as I used to be, maybe that's one of the reasons why I'm struggling, because I used to love to read all the time, but now it's just kind of like, okay. But I love being able to create, and that is what is therapeutic for me. So I make sure that I take those Saturdays and I'm baking something, or I'm going to paint doors. I'm so excited to paint doors, whatever it is. That's my soul care. And it's okay. I think that's what people need to understand. The driven people need to understand that's okay. And those that aren't driven would say, no, that's not rest. No, that is rest. That is rest for someone like me. Mm-hmm. That is soul care for someone like me.
Good. I like to have a lot of different perspectives, because we all have different personalities and different jobs and all of that, different life experiences. So what's going to be the soul care for somebody else is just, it's not going to hit you the same. And so you have to figure out what that thing is and reflect on, when I do this thing, am I more in touch with myself and with God? Am I kinder to other people? Am I feeling connected? Am I growing? Do I feel like God's speaking?
and that's a good point too. You look at King David. King David, you would say his like purpose in life was king. He was a leader. He was compassionate. And his sweet spot as a king was he was always looking out for the little guy. but he had a rest passion and soul care passion, and that was his music. The Psalms, all throughout the Psalms, you see his music. And he played at Jonathan and Saul's funeral. He played at Abner's funeral. And he was always bringing God along with him. That was his soul care. That was his rest time, was being able to create that music.
That's a good point. Yeah, we get to look to the scripture for some examples like that. Okay, well, I want you to be able to tell people once again the title of your book, where they can find it, and where they can find other things that you're creating in the world.
The book is called Underachiever: Finding Contentment in an Achievement-Obsessed World. And I have had quite a few people who aren't necessarily even driven people say, oh my gosh, I want to read that book, because even as a non-driven person, they feel as though they're an underachiever in life, and how can I find that contentment? So that will be available on Amazon. They can also find me at rachelgeneman.com. My handle on TikTok and Instagram is also Rachel Geneman. So pretty easy.
Okay. And those will be in the show notes in case you don't know how to spell that or anything. You can just click right.
Yeah, through. My name's not biblical. That's what I tell people. Yeah, my name's Rachel, but it's not spelled biblically. So it is a little bit different.
The extra A in there.
The yeah. Extra A. Yep. My mom had to be extra.
There you go. So make sure you guys check out the show notes, because you can click right through to see what Rachel's doing. You can find her book on Amazon or wherever you buy books. And I just want to thank you, Rachel, for coming on so that I could talk to you. I hope other people also found benefit in this conversation, but I know that I needed to have this conversation with you. So thank you for being here today.
And thank you for having me. I so appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
The Soul Grit Podcast is a production of Soul Grit Resources. You can find more at soulgritresources.com or on the socials at Soul Grit Resources. You can email me at info@soulgritresources.com.